What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is Gavin here with Daniel, Chase, and Adam, along with special guest Taylor from Orlando City, UK. Taylor, how are you doing today?
Hiya, Gavin. Pleasure to be on as always. Coping, I think that's the operative word for right now, right? Coping. But all good as can be. And good to chat soccer.
Yeah, I saw in that video you put up the other day that you really just wanted to chat soccer.
I am struggling, honestly, at the moment. I'll watch anything. I'd probably crave for a 2-0 defeat at Crewe or anything right now. You know, that's how bad it's getting.
Yeah, it's been pretty rough. And I'm sure Adam, Chase, and Daniel will echo those concerns throughout the episode. But today we wanted to do some questions. But before we did some questions, we actually had some questions for you. So before we get started, do you want to tell us, you know, if people don't know what Orlando City UK is?
Yeah, absolutely. So so we've been going for around about 5 years now that I set up Orlando City UK. We are the official international fan club of Orlando City, representing the UK, which is a great feat. Was really chuffed with that when we officially affiliated with the club back in 2016. And we're just Orlando City mad. We get over to the States once or twice a year. Lucky enough to get down to the opener against RSL this season before it all went wrong. But we just love the club. We're an official kind of members group. So we have about 50, round about 50 members back in the UK and even spread throughout Europe as well. We've got a couple of members in France and some in the States as well. And we've got membership packs, and all the guys are crazy. You would have seen them on Twitter over the last couple of years. They've all still stuck around, which is a good thing to say with our fortunes on the pitch. But they're just as crazy as me. We're always up late. I'm myself living in Canada at the moment, so I'm watching it on the same time zone as you guys, fortunately. But we're used to pulling an all-nighter. Staying up to all hours watching Orlando City. So, missing it big time at the moment.
All right, so this is a question that kind of popped into my head, but then I realized I already had a question. So I guess I can start with this one, and we can kind of go around the table if we want to kind of tell our own stories. But Taylor, I guess I'll start with you since you're our guest. How did you become an Orlando City fan, you know, being over in England? How did you find Orlando City?
Sorry.
Chase.
That was my bad. I've had a six p.m. alarm on Sunday set for fantasy basketball that I never saw.
And take two.
Taylor, how did you become an Orlando City fan?
For me, well, I mean, this. Do you know what? This is the question we always get, and even broader than that, it's like, why? You know, you're from England. You know, you've got the Premier League. You know, you've got all these wonderful leagues in Europe. Why are you interested in MLS? We've been asked it all the time. For me personally, the Orlando City thing is stems from a kid. You know, a lot of our members have got similar stories, and was just lucky enough to travel over to Orlando year on year as a kid. You know, sport rotten really with my parents, and I'm very grateful to do the theme parks, to do all of the tourist stuff that you guys are probably sick about hearing now. You know, but we've done all of that stuff as a kid, and kind of just grew an affection for the place. And I'll be honest, kind of, I got into it in 2015, so the start of MLS. Wasn't there in the early days, but have kind of done all my research and stuff in recent years. And that's me, really, like, instant love affair. And then when I first travelled over to see the club in person, just felt the sense of community, and it was just my club from the off then.
All right, so Daniel, I guess I'll go to you. How did you become an Orlando City fan?
Same way that I got to the United States, I lost a bet and I was kind of forced into it. So I'm a man of my word, and I said that was my forfeit if I lost. So, it's
Daniel. You did not lose a bet to become an Orlando City fan.
I don't know. I was ready to believe him.
Yeah, it could be believable knowing our fortunes.
Yeah, probably. No, but no. In all seriousness, I didn't really start following the club till. I mean, I was watching in 2015. I went to my first game in 2016. Had a friend of mine who was pestering me to go with him, and I thought, you know, why not? So we went down there to the first game at the Citrus Bowl, which I attended, which was, I think it was the Toronto win. They won 3-2 with the last minute penalty kick. I remember Kevin Molina scoring twice in that game as well, and how has he scored once? I don't know, but That was how I got into it. I kind of followed the team from afar, but I was a little, you know, apprehensive about getting into MLS and such. But then I went to the game and I enjoyed it. And, you know, next season I put down some money for season tickets, and I've been a regular visitor for the games ever since. I think I've only missed maybe 4 or 5 games since then.
All right, Chase, your turn.
Yeah, so, like, I was about...
Hold on, Chase.
Hold on, yeah, I'm super loud. All right, so I was about, 12, 13, 14 when we were playing in the USL, and I went to a few games with, like, my club and my family. It's just kind of something to do on the weekends, but I was, like, a little bit too young, and they weren't really soccer fans. But actually how me and my brother became, like, fans of Orlando City is my brother actually had cancer, like, in, like, 2013, and we actually, for the Face the City thing, we got to kind of do, like, an interview about this. I don't know what they're going to do with it, but, like, we were lucky enough to be given season tickets by kind of, like, a group of my parents' friends. They all kind of, like, pitched in and donated to help us out.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Give us something, you know, to... Because my brother, like, he had just gotten, you know, cleared. He was in remission and stuff, and they wanted just to give him something that, you know, he had, like, $1,000 almost. I don't even know how much it is. But he had that type of money just to kind of spend and, you know, get whatever he wants. And he decided to get 2 season tickets. And for the first, like, 3 or 4 years before he, like, he's in college now. He goes to FAMU getting his master's. He went to Tallahassee initially. We went to every single game. And he still comes back for as many games as he can. But initially it was just, like, me and my brother, who we both played soccer, like, all of our, you know, youth lives and into our 20s and stuff. It was something that we, like, kind of bonded over, and we were kind of lucky enough to be even given the opportunity to show up to these games and to follow the club.
Chase, you got me crying over here.
Yeah.
tears in my eyes.
Sorry.
I was going to be like, yeah, I kind of like the sport.
I just, you know, not nearly as good of a story. I was screaming in my bed.
Stop.
Actually, that is... That is one of the first Orlando City games that I ever watched was Orlando City's penalty. Oh my God, my dog is barking at me. And I know y'all can't hear it because of my mic, but, like, I can hear it. Let me try that again. So the screaming in the bed game was actually one of the first games that I ever watched for Orlando City. It was against the Charleston Battery in the 15 Open Cup. The penalty shootout, and it was amazing. I actually went to a USL game. My dad got tickets from a client, I think. He sells cars, and we were like, oh, I don't know, it could be fun, a family outing. You know, it's a sports game. It was pretty good seats. It was like at midfield, lower bowl. I guess it was all lower bowl, but it was like really good seats, and it was just fun thing to do, you know. But I didn't really follow the team until they got to MLS, and I started watching a few of the games. I'm like, wow, this is really interesting. And I'd always enjoyed watching soccer, like when the World Cup was on, and I followed the particularly the women's national team actually pretty in depth because of their World Cup runs. And you know, it just kind of naturally, like, Orlando City's on, I guess I'll watch them. And then I started to learn the names of the players and, like, what they were good at and a little bit about the league and the opponents. And I just never stopped, and I do this thing where I get really obsessive about something. And, well, here I am doing a podcast about it.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens. It's almost like a slippery slope.
So that's me.
If I were to do mine, similar to Chase, I was part of a club team and we got asked to come out to a game. And so in 2013, we came out. Can't remember who scored, but we won like 4, Orlando City won like 4-0, and somebody scored a bicycle kick. That's all I remember. And I want to say it might have been like, I don't know. I don't know who we were going against at the time. There's a picture long of me and a couple of friends at the game with the scoreline. But that's kind of how I learned of it. And, you know, it was kind of like, I was young, I didn't really care, so I didn't really watch any more games. And I was only, I don't even know, 13, 14 at the time, so. And then 2015 comes around, and you hear Ricardo Kaká is joining Orlando City. And, you know, I'm like, I'm a big Arsenal fan. Obviously, he didn't play for Arsenal, but I know of European soccer. And I was like, what? Kaká's going to be here? I'm going to be able to see a player of his magnitude live in person. So that really caught me on. And similar to Adam, when I get into something, I really, really get obsessive over it, have to know everything about it. That's just the type of person I am. So that's kind of how I fell in love with Orlando City. Sorry, something popped up. But yeah, that's how I got into Orlando City. If we want to start with another question, kind of going on the track of Kaká, Fresco Esco on Twitter, great name, has said, who has made a bigger impact, Kaká or Nani? So Taylor, I'm going to go to you first, but then, you know, the discussion is open. Who do you think has had the bigger impact, Kaká or Nani?
Kaká or Nani? So, I mean, they are the two biggest high profile lines, aren't they, so far? Is it fair to say off the pitch, on the pitch? I don't want to do Kaká a disservice. I mean, kind of he put us on the map, didn't he, really? I see a lot of people kind of on Twitter over the years kind of saying, did Kaká really do it? You know, he didn't make the playoffs. I don't know. I think he was absolutely brilliant for our club in what he did on the pitch and off the pitch. But I'm skirting the question here, aren't I, really?
Well, it's hard because impact is such a vague term. You know, again, if we wanted to do off the pitch, on the pitch, we can, because it's almost like Nani on the pitch, Kaká off the pitch for me. And I think we can all share that, yeah?
I don't know. I think Kaká, when he was on the pitch, is honestly the better player. I mean, in European soccer, even, like, Nani is elite, really, really good. I mean, Euro champion, captain when Ronaldo's out. Kaká's on another level. He's a legend. And I think we saw that when he was on the pitch for us in Orlando, you saw that he was a legend. He was top three player in MLS. I don't think Nani can lay claim to that. The thing Nani has on him is durability so far.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to add as well. I mean, if you're just taking it by stats alone, Nani got the 12 goals, 10 assists in last season, which is the most prolific streak of any Lion so far. So I don't know. There are reasons for both. Personally, I'm a Kaká fan. It's not to take away from Nani at all, but I personally think Kaká had the greater impact when you take the off the pitch stuff as well.
Yeah, I think that they were both pretty similar in terms of, you know, they're both great players that we had on the field, but just culturally, like, Kaká, it was such a huge like milestone for us. Like, coming into the season, like, he drove a lot of the buzz, and that's why a lot of people were excited. So, like, to an extent, like, there wouldn't be as much of even like a foreign following of the club without Kaká, let alone like within America.
Oh, speaking on that, when I go on Twitter sometimes and you look up just the words Orlando City, have you ever seen those things where it says favorite team from each league or whatever, and it lists so many different leagues? The amount of Brazilian Twitter accounts that have Orlando City is through the
roof. Because Kaká.
Because of Kaká.
Absolutely.
Because Kaká.
I mean, he widened our fan base to a whole different country. Him alone. And
there's,
I'm sure we have some Portuguese followers as well, just because of Nani.
Isn't there like another Orlando City Twitter account that is just like Orlando City Brazil, and it's like verified, like affiliated with the club?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Those guys are aligned as well with the club. Yeah.
So like, there's definitely a lot of interest coming out of Brazil simply because of him, and that's like one of the biggest markets in terms of soccer in the world.
To illustrate what Kaká did for us off the pitch and really getting us started, I don't think Orlando City necessarily gets to MLS like it did without Kaká. But so take Gavin's story about, oh, I can go see Kaká now, a player like that in my own backyard. Replace Kaká with Nani there. It just doesn't have the same ring. Yeah. Sorry.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean,
it's a Ballon d'Or winner. For years,
just another level.
One of the best players in the world, if not the best.
And that is no disrespect to Nani, none at all.
Now, yeah. Who other than those two would you say has had a big impact? What other names could you throw in there?
No,
Dom it's Dwyer.
Not, no one near. Yeah. That's for sure.
In terms of cult status, Dom Dwyer,
and not nearly the same level, but like almost Joe Bendick, because I don't know, he was immensely praised, and like you said, like he had like kind of a cult following of people who they were his favorite player, and he was such a big kind of, I don't know, like you know, like when he would come out to the goal on the side of the wall, like they would just cheer his name, like they would be there behind him, you know, and the club as a whole as well, but it was a lot of them were, you know, diehard Joe Bendick fans as well.
I think Joe in his peak years at Orlando City, Joe was like, he almost had an arrogance in goal, and it sounds silly to say that when we never made playoffs, you know, but he made the difference so many times, didn't he? For me, kind of like after your Kakas and Nannies, obviously, I think you have like the cult heroes, don't you, after that? You have like the Yoshi Yotuns, you have the Christian Higuitas, people like
Adrian
that.
Adrian Winter.
Yeah.
Adrian Winter.
Still to this day.
Chris Mueller?
We should re-sign Winter, even though he's close to retirement. Re-sign Winter.
Scott Sutter.
Scudder just for his Scudder. Just for his Twitter game, I was gonna say. Scudder, that's his new nickname.
Honestly, guys, all weekend I've been like I say, you can tell I've been bored because I've been like on Photoshop creating graphics of like old players and stuff. So this is a good question because I was scouring kind of like our all time roster this weekend, and I mean, in terms of like where players have been in their career before Orlando City, like it's foggy memory now, but Julio Baptista, remember him?
Oh, he was awesome. Yeah. I had him on, I think we all had him on our bench for our all-time teams, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
At least three of us. Sad.
You've been at Madrid, Arsenal.
Sevilla.
Roma.
He was, I mean, Antonio Nocerino.
Yeah, Nocerino. He played
Juventus,
like
AC Euro. Milan.
The reason that I say Dom Dwyer is a solid third, though, is because of the legend surrounding him, not only from the USL days, but when, and you'll still have people support him and defend him, even though he has been really sorry for more than half of his time in MLS for us. But go look at the videos of when he was on the airport or coming in to MCO.
That was a moment.
And the crowds that flocked to meet him. Can you imagine? I mean, aside from a Kaká level player, can you imagine that happening for anyone else? Just the folktale level legend that Dom Dwyer USL was, I think cements him as a third in terms of overall impact on Orlando City as a whole.
He's also like the only player that I can think of that has like his own like chant kind of, you know.
Like, yeah, that's true. He's the only one that everyone knows. He scores when he wants. He scores when he wants. Dom fucking Dwyer scores when he wants. Everyone knows that.
Mm.
You know?
I wish we had chants for players. I remember I did a YouTube video when we signed Nani. And this was when I was really, really, really first starting to feel like I wanted to talk about Orlando City. I did a YouTube video talking about the positives that Nani was going to bring to the team. And embarrassingly enough, in the video, I made a chant. It was a shitty chant, but it was a chant because I think we need more chants for players. Like,
yeah.
I mean, only
we
one.
We absolutely do.
I mean, no question. That helps bring the fans and the players closer together. Like, we could easily make a chant about an octopus for Galese and a bear for Urso.
I mean, octopus's gardens right there.
Talk about how fast Juan is. You know, there are so many opportunities with every single squad in the world, obviously, but I think chance are important. And I know Taylor and Daniel can probably speak to this greatly because, or Daniel especially, since he's been to so many Leeds games over in England and yada, yada, yada. You know, chance really help bring fans and players together, and we just don't really have that right now.
Yeah, you make a good point, Gavin. I mean, really, like, and I think that's just American soccer in general, really, isn't it? It's like we don't really have a player chance. You know, you have the ones you typically hear around the league, but they're always like these team ones. I mean, even if it was something like back in the day, I'm an Arsenal fan as well, like yourself, and you know, just it can be as simple as where the player's from. You know, I remember Patrick Vieira back in the day. He comes from Senegal. He's born in Senegal. He plays for, you know, something as simple as that. You know, it doesn't have to be offensive. It doesn't have to have swearing.
Open up the Wikipedia article, you know, just start reading.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I you make a good point. Like, if there were more player chance, it kind of just brings everyone together a bit more, doesn't it? It makes the players feel good, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a couple days ago for MLS Now podcast, we actually interviewed a Cincinnati player, and he had gone to Northern Ireland for a couple months to play for a team over there, and he was talking about how important it was that the fans made him feel welcome to the team. They made a chant for him really quickly because he made a big save in a big game or whatever. He was a goalkeeper, and he said it was important that the fans had, you know, really welcomed him so quickly. He's very young. He's like 24 years old, very young for a goalkeeper. And he just said, you know, that really helped me fully settle in. You know, going from America to Northern Ireland could not really be the easiest thing in the world. But for him, the fans really helped him.
Totally. And I mean, speaking of chance, there was actually one scrolling through Twitter this weekend, Richarlison at Everton. He was so bored, self-isolating, that he simply just tweeted the chant that the Everton fans sing, which was like, he cost 50 million, he's fucking brilliant, or something like that, you know. But the players love this stuff, you know, and like the Orlando City fan base is, they are pretty creative. I'm sure we could do a job, and like you say, for Juan with his speed, you know, there's so many different plays you could do.
Now, going off of that, we have a question from Instagram. Yeo, is that Kellen? He says, Taylor, have you been to an Orlando game? I know you've been to an Orlando game. How does the atmosphere compare to UK soccer? So you and Daniel really take the mantle on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Atmospheres. So a lot of, obviously, I've had to contend with, Daniel will be the same. You know, I've had to contend with the Euro snobs, you know, and the elite, and be like, you know, they see the videos like the Atlanta United fans with the Playmobil drum and this and that. And they're like, you know, what kind of atmosphere does actually get created in MLS? And I think that's the biggest misconception. I personally feel, having experienced both, that the with the TIFOs and with the sheer partisanship of the crowd, I think the MLS atmospheres are brilliant. And honestly, like, the top six back in England, you'll see some amazing football, some amazing soccer. But, you know, if it's Liverpool playing against Bournemouth, or if it's my team, Arsenal, playing against Watford at home, you know, you're going to have the chance. But the atmospheres, honestly, are not great. You know, you've got all different types of cultures in America. And, you know, whether it's like a drumline, like we have at Exploria Stadium, or over there in the Pacific Northwest at Portland Timbers, just each region of America kind of has their own cultures that just create an atmosphere that, to me personally, this is one of the reasons I love MLS, because it's different, and I think the atmospheres are better. I really do.
Wow. Daniel?
I agree with some of it. I mean, what I will say to that first off is that you're kind of comparing two separate products, because some of the, you know, the concepts you'll find in the MLS you'll not see in the UK. Like, for example, you have the drum line, you have the weird goal celebrations. I can't remember which team it is, but it's the team, is it Portland Timbers, who saw off like the end of a tree every time they score.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Those Nick.
That's fucking.
I love that. I think it's quality. I think like that's what gives it a unique flavor. So I feel like if you're looking in that respect, I think MLS certainly is very good with that. I think they're probably a little bit more creative and, you know, maybe obviously they're trying to make it more of an entertainment value as well as a sport. So I think MLS probably is higher in that regard now. Speaking on match day atmospheres, I haven't seen many of the top six teams recently. I've lived here for so long, and the only games I've been to see have been, you know, in the championship. So I can only speak for what I've witnessed. One city clubs in the UK are very, very well supported. The fans are extremely passionate. We know a few supporters ourselves who support those teams. We have a chap, I think his name's Jake, he supports Newcastle. We got Charlotte supports Sunderland. I support Leeds. You know, we've got some really good, strong, passionate support. And I think, you know, that the stadiums are extremely loud. Those fans get behind those teams immensely, even when they're losing. One thing I will say, MLS teams versus teams maybe in the UK, is that when the team's losing, I don't think the atmosphere is as good in Orlando or in the MLS. I think that teams kind of have to be on the front foot. They need to be winning to get the attendances to stay higher and to therefore keep the noise louder in the grounds. That's just my perception of it.
I mean, that's a fair perception.
Yeah.
Kind of what we were talking about last week with, you know, ticket prices and beer mm-hmm. prices. If you're not putting a winning product out there, people aren't going to.
And that's the thing.
And that's what we've seen.
And
in
like,
Orlando.
As a sporting fan, I resent the term product, because for me, the culture I grew up in, born in 1982, one city club, and or one club city, I should say, is that you support your team. Your team is your team. It's like your brother. You stick with them, whether they piss you off or they don't. So no matter what happens, you're there. You support them. That's it. When it comes out with a term product, it's like, well, okay, if the style of football is crap and it's long ball and it's in League One and you're 15 points below zero like Leeds were in 2007, does that mean I walk away from the team? I don't think it does. You know, but then everyone's perception is the same. I've seen the attendances in Orlando where the stadium is a third full, and last season I couldn't give away tickets, let alone sell them for $10. So I think that does tally in with the atmosphere question. How can you have a great atmosphere if you can't get the stadium to be full or remotely full? And, you know, I'll have to say this. The Orlando City-New York game, the stadium opener in 2017, that was as loud as I've heard Orlando ever been, and it was comparable with a lot of the British games I've been to. I will say that was an immense occasion. I think most of you guys were probably there. And you can certainly vouch for that. But it needs to be, I think for it to be comparable in atmosphere, it's got to be more consistent. So that's my answer.
Yeah, Daniel makes some great points. I remember when my first game at Orlando City was the glamorous 2-2 draw with RSL, where we rescued it right at the end. And that was a tremendous atmosphere that day. But the first thing as a Brit going over there that stuck out to me was, just to me, American soccer is growing every year. It's absolutely fantastic. But it's family friendly versus back home in the UK. Daniel will say the same, being a Leeds fan. Football is life and death in England. There's a quote from Jurgen Klopp, comes from the Bundesliga. Obviously, Germans are football crazy. And he said when he came to England, he realised that football is life and death in England. And it's true, you know. In America, the thing that stood out to me was kind of the cultural things, you know, grabbing a bag of popcorn at half time, you know, or having a shot of tequila, stuff like this. When back home in the UK, it's a pie and a pint of lager, you know, a pint of beer. So these kind of things culturally, they're different. They're different products, like Daniel says, you know, really well. I just think it's a product in America because it's a newer concept, soccer over there. I'm a little iffy with that term as well. I'm old school. And it was really disappointing for me to see last season the crowds trailing off at Orlando City. It became, we were getting trolled left, right and centre, weren't we, by other fan bases and saying, oh, Orlando claim to be, you know, they've got these amazing fans. Well, where are they? And to me, that is disappointing, because when you choose a football team, especially for a Brit, it is for life, you know, sickness and health, you name it. You know, you have the good times and you have the bad. And I want to see that. Obviously, to get our stadium full again, we have to start winning matches, you know. It's not even getting the playoffs yet. It's just winning matches and kind of getting a sense of direction again. That's what we've completely lost. And obviously, that's why Oscar Pereira's here. But that's the big difference for me, America to England. Kind of people can put it down again in America, where in England, it's, like I say, it's life and death.
Well, yeah, I mean, I got another point to add. The 2-2 result you mentioned, Taylor, those types of games are the games that build the culture. They're not winning every game 1-2, 3-0, making it look easy. It doesn't necessarily build culture for me. Comeback wins, you know, standing up against adversity,
yep,
beating the odds, those build the culture. And I feel like those are the games people keep going back to when they think of their favourite memories. Like for me, yeah. Oh, sorry, Taylor. Yeah, sorry, it went a bit muffled there, sorry. You know, we were talking in our group chat. We have a little group chat on our phones, and we've started talking about the season reviews. We might start doing those soon. Like a retrospective look at past seasons. And I was thinking to myself, you know, my favourite night at the Orlando City Stadium was actually the opener against DC United. And I think of it as a package. The stadium was full. It was a nighttime game. The lights were there. They had a cracking little setup for the introduction for the players. We had a new team. Obviously, it was very exciting that particular time. And then to top it off, they were a man down and they came back and snatched a 1-1 in injury time. And that particular performance for me is what created, you know, like an expectation, a barometer of what we want to expect from the team. And
you're absolutely right. Another one that comes to mind when you say that, actually, do you remember a few years ago, the guys will remember as well, I think we played Chicago Fire at home and we were down to 9 men, and then Bendick did he did that crazy Superman save, didn't he? That's another game that Daniel mentions. You don't always have to win. It's just kind of creating those memories that I was there. You know, the running of the Wolves one last season, you know. But it's these kind of moments that build a culture and, you know, memories.
Yeah, that's your culture. That's what matters. And, you know, and just going back to the attendance point, I have a pretty funny sort of sub-story I make. I was at the New York Red Bulls game 2 years ago. They won 4-3. I think Coleman got a goal on his debut off the deflected shot by Sutter. But the guy next to me, I used to sit in section 104. And I always used to call it like it's the party section, because people who sit up there, they just seem to be talking and not really watching the game. Anyways, the guy next to me somehow managed to contrive to go and get a beer. He missed every single goal. I don't know how. I have no idea how you go to a 7-goal game
and miss everyone.
Well, the fact that you get up to go and get a beer while this is going on is bad, but to miss every single goal, I mean,
criminal.
I don't get it. Like,
you can watch him back on YouTube. It's not really the same, right?
No. It's like, he asked me what happened, and I'm like, you missed it all. I'm not even going to bother recapping it for you.
Over in England, I have seen that, and I mean, this is true in America as well. People coming into the ground, you know, 10, 15 minutes, like, the ground is never full at the starting whistle, unless obviously it's like an FA Cup final or something. They make sure it's full at the starting whistle, but like, why do you guys think that happens, just in general, I should say? Why do you think that, you know, people don't show up on time to the game? Is that just people will always be late?
For me personally, Arsenal's my example, because I went there absolutely years and years as a kid growing up and into my adolescence. And it's the pubs. Honestly, you think of English people, you think they drink, you know. It's the pubs. People will be putting their bets on. I know betting is not as kind of much as a thing in North America as it is in England. People are putting their bets on. They're going to the takeaway shops to, you know, to grab something to eat. And, you know, like I said, it's life and death, you know. So you'd think people would want to be there right on the kickoff, the whistle. But But you do see it a lot. Another thing for me as an Arsenal fan that I find kind of undefendable, really, and like I said, it's that top six thing, you know, is the passion really there? Like, you will always see at the Emirates Stadium, especially over the last, you know, 5-6 years as we've kind of declined as a club, you will always see the cannon kind of emerging, like at 10 minutes to the full-time whistle, you know. And I don't like that, but I can tell you exactly why that happens. It happens because Finsbury Park Station, which is the closest kind of mainline train station, railway station, it gets absolutely packed, you know. So people are kind of prioritising kind of getting to the game and getting away from it, which is sad, really. But, you know, with the amount of games, certainly in England with the Champions League, Europa League, various cup competitions, midweek, you know, Sunday evenings, kind of Saturday mornings, it's the kind of getting to and getting away from the ground is probably the main reason. But it is sad, especially, you know, when there's a lively game and people are leaving, like Daniel said, with the guy getting the beer, missing all of the seven goals in the Red Bulls game. You know, it seems crazy, but I suppose it's all on levels, and you get the hardcore fans, and then you get the ones who are more casual. You certainly see that at Orlando City.
I just can't stand being late to the game. Even if I'm there like 20 seconds after kickoff, you know, nothing even close to important happened. I'm like, damn, I missed kickoff.
Yeah.
Like, Chase, Adam, do you guys, have you ever showed up late to a game? Does that matter to you?
I have once, and it was actually the running of the wall game. So I have a special needs cat. She has something that's called wobbly cat syndrome, and it's where part of her brain is underdeveloped, and it basically she has trouble with like balance and decision making and stuff, and so she's not allowed to go outside because we are not sure if she could find her way home. Actually, she did get lost once and she couldn't find her way back. And yeah, it's just not good. She's fine. We got her back, but we had to have help. But anyway, so I was, it was the running of the wall game, the semifinal against NYCFC. And I was like taking a nap before the game because I was going to meet my friends there and like, oh, what if we win? We might go out afterward. And then I woke up and I realized I left the garage door open and there's a little cat door, to get to the garage because that's where the litter box is. And I couldn't find the special needs cat that's not allowed to be outside. And so I call my friend, I'm like, bro, I can't find my cat. I will get there when I can. Luckily, the first half and really all of... like all of regular time for that game was kind of boring, actually.
Yeah, it was. It was, to be honest.
So I didn't get there until halftime. Luckily, I had my guy, my parking guy there, hooked me up with some cheap parking close to the stadium, and I got there. I got there at halftime. He's like, "Yo, where are you?" I'm like, "I had to find my cat. My cat was sleeping inside a closet. By the way, she didn't even get out."
Oh no.
Yeah, I felt dumb.
But like, did that like irk you?
Oh yeah,
late to the game.
I was like, what if I miss something? Like, I was like, kept checking the score on my phone. Like, I just really hope I don't miss goal. Really hope I don't miss goal. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I felt so bad, and I was like, I didn't know they closed all the gates of the stadium too, except for A. So I got there, and I usually park by gate C, and I had to walk all the way around the stadium to gate A.
There was one game where me and my girlfriend went and we got there and the tickets weren't working and the tickets had been given to me by a friend and I guess I had to go through and print it even though there was a barcode on the thing they sent me. So that was very annoying, and going through that process, it took almost like, I think it took about 35 minutes off of the first half, and I remember just being so annoyed that I was not going to be able to see it. You know, you could watch it on the TV, but it's like I drove all the way. I mean, I live in Tampa, which is two hours away from the stadium, you know. I drove all the way down to watch this game, and here I am missing 30, 35 minutes of it. You know, that was the worst of the worst for me.
A filthy I-4 traffic, man.
Oh.
It's bad.
Don't get me started on I-4, man. I always leave a solid 3 hours before every game just in case I4 gets backed up like it does most games.
Yeah, I never realized you were based down there in Tampa, actually, Gavin. That's impressive. Like, that's, like I say, the commitment of fans kind of getting there on time and stuff. Like, that is 3/4 of your day, right, that you're there.
Mm-hmm. It's a long journey going there, coming back. Plus, I've got two animals that I've got to take care of, so I have to find somebody to take care of them. If, you know, my girlfriend's coming with me, it's a ordeal for me. It's a lot easier for other people, I know, but that's why I don't have season tickets, because I just can't at the moment in time. I just make it to the games that I can make it to. But we should probably, we've been going quite a while off of that one question. Let's move to a different one. Let's kind of start talking about coronavirus. You know, we have some questions based on that. And I think we got a pretty good one here from Elder Gorilla on Twitter. He says, when or if, I'm going to go with if for now, if MLS gets up and running again, do you guys want to see the same format, East and West, with playoffs? Or do we just do straight Supporters Shield as the winner to determine the 2020 champ?
Who wants to go first on this one? Big question.
I've actually thought about this because I saw the question earlier today. I think you, so say the season gets shortened to, and I think this is probably very likely, season is shortened to the point where we can't play the full schedule. I think you look at the NFL's format, and I am of the opinion that the NFL's schedule and playoff format prior to the new CBA, which they signed, which allows weeks 17 games and an extra playoff team, which I despise, but whatever, y'all don't listen to me for NFL takes. I'm of the opinion that the previous 16-game, 12 playoff teams is a perfect format. And I think that MLS would be wise to go to maybe not just 16 games if they can fit more, but say play everyone in your conference at least once, twice if you can get it, and then sprinkle in, so like take Orlando City's in the East. We play everyone from the East twice if we can, and then sprinkle in some West teams if we can do that after. And then have, if we can't fit in a full playoffs, do single elimination. I think that would be...
Well, it is single elimination.
It is? Wasn't it double? Oh, they changed that this year, didn't they? Yeah.
So maybe like take out a round? Maybe take out, you know, maybe take out seventh or sixth place teams or something like that?
I mean... I know that's our best shot to make playoffs, but I think too many MLS teams make the playoffs anyway. So as someone who watches the league, and I think to neutrals, that makes better competition. It makes the playoffs mean more. As an Orlando City supporter, obviously, I want us to make playoffs. But what MLS should do is basically make their schedule as much like the NFL as possible and try to make the competition format still work to have a respectable champion. I think playoffs are important to MLS because they're important in American sports, and most of the fans are American. And it provides intrigue to the teams. Like, LAFC ran away with the Shield last season. If it was like the Prem in Liverpool, if it was like the Prem where Liverpool just ran away with it and there's not much to play for after except Champions League, then... and Europa, and obviously relegation, but that's way at the bottom. But for those mid-table teams, there's really nothing to play for. And MLS gives them something to play for at the playoffs. So I think scrapping the playoffs, they may have to do it just for timing. And obviously, this is not a normal season. Everyone would understand it, but I would rather them still find a way to make playoffs happen.
Kind of for me on this, sorry to interrupt there. For me on this topic, I mean... first and foremost, it's an unmitigated disaster, isn't it, for the people that are kind of responsible for squeezing the season and packaging it up into whatever it's going to be. I don't envy whoever's making that
absolutely.
Decision.
Absolutely.
I mean, obviously, there's more important things going on in the world at the moment. You know, football, soccer is obviously important to us. It will come back. When it does, I think, like you say, the easiest thing to take away is... cross-conference games, you know, you can scrap those. I think you play everyone in your conference and if you can. And I totally agree that you need to retain the playoffs. That is American culture. That is American sport. And determine your champion that way. But you guys probably know better than me, but I don't know when this is going to peak in the United States and obviously Canada. But yeah, I don't envy who's making the decision to squeeze the season.
Do you guys think, and this is a question from MTBH, a great follower of mine, Maureen, will this season bring permanent changes going forward? What do you think they could or would be?
I mean, I think that the one that we hear them talk about a lot is moving to like a European schedule where like we obviously start in like February, and as opposed to that kind of running through like going through Christmas and kind of ending in when is Premier League end? I forget when.
May.
Yeah, we're on August to May. Yeah.
End in May and like start in like, yeah, August to May. Yeah. And I think that that would be ideal, especially for like transfers and things like that. But I don't necessarily know if we'd see some drastic change like that, but I definitely think the opportunity is there. And as for, like, the scheduling thing, like, do you guys, like, I know, Gavin, you don't. Do you guys think that we'll even see, like, the league come back at all? I don't think that, if it does come back, I think it'll be probably closed-door games, if anything.
Honestly, for me, kind of, I was thinking really the other day, I was thinking we don't see this 2020 season fulfilled at all. Honestly, yeah, like that hand on heart, I just feel that this season just is not going to get running. Like, I don't know about you guys.
I think it happens. I know.
Really?
I know Gavin doesn't.
When do you think we get back?
He wrote his thoughts in an article.
I literally wrote them in an article. That's correct. Here's the thing, though. If it does come back, I think Chase would be the most right that it would all be behind closed doors. We can't expect that once we pass our peak and they start letting people congregate in big areas, that these teams and the government and everything is going to let everything return to normal. We can't. It's going to be a phased out process over a course of probably a year or even two. You know, it's not going to be, okay, everybody go pack a stadium 50,000 full. Or I guess in our case, 25,000 full. Don't go, you know, don't congregate in big areas still, even though this is potentially gone. We have to phase it out. I don't think that it's feasible or smart to just flip the switch and say, okay, this is almost gone. Let's all go back out, because that's just going to start the whole process over.
For me as well, like, I just don't think you can play games behind closed doors in Major League Soccer. The reason being is that these clubs just do not pull in the same kind of money as the Premier League, you know. That is why, listening to your previous pods, that, you know, you was talking about kind of like Bud Light, weren't you? Why do you pay $12 for Bud Light in the stadium? Like, the Major League Soccer clubs is a newer developing league. You know, they rely on gate receipts and kind of concessions and food and drink at the stadium, you know. So if you play every game behind closed doors, you keep the players happy because they've been quarantined, you know, that's their life. But I don't know. I don't know about behind closed doors games personally myself. I think fans are everything to the sport, but who knows?
We don't have really enough.
I actually think the opposite. I don't have enough TV money to support league on its own, but American TV money is pretty everything in sports. I'm using everything as an adjective, but whatever. It's massive in the sports business world, TV deals, and particularly new deals are going to be negotiated with MLS pretty soon, I think, in the next like 1 or 2 years, I think.
2022.
Yeah. TV rights and revenue are absolutely massive, and it's actually mostly what salary caps are based off of. So in terms of like paying the players, I think they would get more ratings than usual, and I don't know if ad money would step up or whatever, but I think the TV money would be enough to at least support closed door games, and it's better to do some business than no business, right?
Potentially.
I don't know the finances of like, are players still getting paid, or how much are they getting paid, or managers or whatever. But I know that clubs still have expenses right now, because just keeping a business in existence is expensive. And if there's a way for them to make revenue, I think as a business, they have a responsibility to take it as an important part of our sports culture and entertainment and just getting back to normal. They should take it. They almost have a moral responsibility to do so if they can do it safely and without adversely affecting public health.
Speaking on finances, I do know that they haven't come out publicly and said it, but if you are a season ticket member and you want to restructure your payment plan, or if you know you're struggling to make the payment, obviously with all this going on, I believe the club are willing, you know, you'd have to reach out to your representative, but I believe they're willing to restructure it with you, and helping season ticket holders do that. So I just want, I heard somewhere that that's happening. So if you're a season ticket holder and you want to explore that option, definitely reach out to your season ticket rep, your ticket rep. Yeah, I would hope that they would offer something like that, especially in these tough times. But another question regarding coronavirus. Where is it? Actually, that was my only one. So we'll go to a different topic, I guess. Let's have a fun one. Lee337 asks, has Taylor, and I guess this could go for all of us, but have you ever had good English food in Orlando?
Good English food. Not food, but beverages, drinks. When I was at Epcot years and years ago, this is not really, it's kind of skirting the question again, but it's kind of most horrified at something English in Orlando, and it was a pint of Guinness in Epcot in Disney, and I think it was something like $20 or something, and I was just horrified. But any English food in Orlando? That's a good question. Not really. You know, when I go over there, I'm obviously gorging on all of your stuff. You know, the Chick-fil-A's and the good American stuff. You know, the salty stuff. So yeah, good question though.
Fam, Daniel? You did not just mention Chick-fil-A as the first American food.
It's one of the first that springs to mind for me.
Oh man, that hurts.
Daniel, you've lived here for a while. Have you ever had good English food in Orlando?
I like a lot of food, so I mean, I'll go somewhere and if it's palatable and whatever, even if it's not authentic, I'll still enjoy it. But if you're looking at authentic and excellent English food, I really can't say I have, except for my mum's cooking. My mum's cooking hasn't changed. That's nice. Oh,
what is English food?
English food is, it's all...
They just like dump beans on everything.
That is, well, I'm going to ask about that in a second, actually. That was a good point.
Roast potatoes.
But yeah, it's a meat and potatoes type of diet, you know? A lot of fairly simple but effective dishes back up our menu, and I really like it. I mean, I can't say I've had... really authentic English food here in Orlando. No, it's Fridays on 27 does some fairly good food, but they lost my trust when they put curry flavored powder into the shepherd's pie that I ordered.
Oh, that's a sin.
I paid $16 for that, and it tasted like curry. And I just said to him, I said, "What's going on here?"
No tip.
And he said, "Oh,
that's not the server's fault."
It was the owner of the restaurant that came to me.
Yeah.
To see how my meal was, and I said, "Well, you put curry in my shepherd's pie," and he said, "Yeah, Americans don't like our food; they think it's a bit bland, so I have to put something in just to." And I said, "Yeah, but it's not authentic, then, is it? You know." And my auntie used to own a fish and chip shop, and she always told me what the secret ingredient was for the batter on the fish and the chips. And I can tell you now, they don't put it in it over here, so it doesn't quite taste the same, you know.
Isn't there beer batter?
It's not beer batter, no. We don't use beer batter. Oh, I mean, really? You'll find some places that do, but the traditional recipe is not beer batter, no. No, they...
Adam, maybe you need to make some English platter as a special over at...
Oh, yeah, no. Right. And then as for the beans on...
I have so many cuisines to get through before I get to English.
Oh, no, and as for the beans on toast, I was going to ask you, Taylor, are you a beans and toast person or not?
Absolutely. I'm English.
Perfect. Because
the Yanks just do not get it, do they? They do not get the beans.
Oh, I got viciously...
Daniel, tell the story.
I got viciously accosted. It was an outrage by Gavin's girlfriend on Thursday night. I felt violated. And let me tell you the story, right? Let me tell you. She went at me for 10 minutes in back and forth messages about beans on toast and how gross it was. But then she proceeded to tell me, okay, like this is morally acceptable, that she can have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and put Cheetos in the middle of it.
Oh my God.
So
now, all of those things are nice, but not together.
Well, I sent Gavin a picture Cheetos. The following day of some Bush's baked beans and a loaf of white bread next to it. And I said, look what I'm going to do with this. Because you know what? You can take your beans, your Bush beans, and you can put them right on my toast. And I'm going to do it, whether you like it or not.
Oh, she was so funny. She was like, why do they do that?
It's a British staple, honestly. Like, beans on toast is, you've made me hungry right now.
Put some late evening get some cheese on there as well. Get some cheese.
I'm imagining like a classic like English breakfast. So you got the English muffin, the beans, the eggs, the bacon, and then
black pudding,
mushrooms and tomatoes. The thing I have a problem with this is actually not the beans on toast. I actually think that kind of works as long as you toast the bread, not like just plain white. As long as you toast the bread, that's fine. Mm-hmm. The problem I have is the raw tomatoes just on the plate. What the fuck?
You haven't even mentioned black pudding either.
Black pudding is a staple.
I forgot that exists, and I would like it to remain that way.
What the hell's black
pudding? It's pig's blood.
Yeah.
Oh.
I love it.
I've actually tried it, not a fan.
I love it.
In the slightest.
Not that this is English, but have any of you had Vegemite?
Vegemite?
No.
I haven't had that, no. I've had Marmite, but not Vegemite.
I had it. It was the worst thing I've ever tasted.
Okay, but like, why just like slices of raw tomato?
Well, I actually kind of agree with you, sliced tomato. I had a choice, and I went back to Leeds in January. First stop I made when I got to the train station, I went straight to Wetherspoons and got breakfast, and they put me two really nice, tin tomatoes. Taylor knows what I mean by tin tomatoes. So they're like, they're all strung out, they're soft, the skin's gone, and they were just perfect. They were warmed up, and they were like just on there. Ready in their beautiful glory to be cut up with all that juice going over. I just love it.
Where does that come from, though? Like, I kind of get it. And I guess I just... The mushrooms don't really go either, but I love mushrooms. But, like, where does that come from? Just, like, someone, like, had a breakfast plate. Like, all right, we got eggs, bacon, toast. Sausage. We put beans on toast, sausage. We put beans on toast, so whatever. You know what this plate needs? Tomatoes.
Well, I think it's to balance the diet.
To add some color,
balance your diet.
While we're talking food, I obviously rep in the UK, but I personally live in Toronto in Canada at the moment, and there's a good pub scene up here, and there's loads of Irish kind of English breakfasts that you can get, and they are just not the same. They do, like you said about the tomatoes, they do the sliced salad tomatoes and not the tinned ones, like Daniel said. That is the one thing. Well, other than a chippy tea, fish and chips, I miss an English breakfast more than anything, having been in Canada a year. More than anything.
Just a simple fish and chips?
Yeah, absolutely. That is the first thing, like Dan went straight into Wetherspoons, I'd be first in the chippy without doubt. First thing I'm going to do. Like,
you got the battered sausage and chips as well with curry sauce.
Yeah, can't beat it. Can't beat. I used to live in Leeds actually, and there was one down in Rothwell where I was living that kind of won Yorkshire Chip Shop of the Year, like three years running, and I would go there straight away from the airport.
Brilliant.
Now we're gonna do another question. I think Elder Gorilla, who I asked before a question from before, came up with another really good one. He wanted to hear our thoughts on the Coman, Florinel Coman rumors starting up again. I don't think, I know I got Daniel's takes from it. He was already a member of the podcast at the time, but I don't know if I had Chase's or Adam's. So I want to ask your initial thoughts on the Coman rumor, as well as it starting up again. And then he asks, would we have to offload somebody? So Chase, I'm going to start with you. What were your initial thoughts on the Coman rumor? And then what are your thoughts on it starting again?
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit on the first podcast that I was in. And that's like precisely like the type of signing that we have to be going after, because he is like a player that's linked to anyone really under the sun, kind of like a Miguel Almiron was before he came to the MLS. And I think that our negotiation strategies initially weren't spectacular, but now that the circumstances have changed, I do believe that we might be able to get him at kind of a cheaper price. Not that you want to be like taking advantage of this global pandemic, but some clubs might just be looking to sell because they need to stay afloat. And I think that that's something that we could kind of look at for Steaua Bucureste, which I believe is the team that he plays for. And I think that if he is to come here, it would probably spell like the end of like Josue Coleman, if he even has any chance to come back. I think they're kind of similar players. You know, Coleman, like the Romanian man, more of a wide player. And Josue is kind of a wide man as well, but you know, he plays at the middle. But we would have to clear up like a DP spot or like just a lot of salary. I don't know what Josue is, like what type of contract he's going to be on when he comes back. But I think Florinal is going to be certainly a DP, and he's going to be like our prime attacking player almost, because he's had a fantastic past year and he's done well in Romania. He actually scored like a fantastic goal against England in the Euros, and he's just a player I'd be really excited about. And I think it's more likely now that we see it happen, because they're probably going to be looking just to try to get some money to stay economically afloat as a club. So I think it's something that we actually might see happen, hopefully.
Now, do you think we will have to offload anybody?
Yeah, like this kind of like what I was saying
with
Coleman, but I also think that Dwyer's probably going to leave anyways, unless he has like a really good year. But I just think that it would definitely, which probably won't, but I think that's definitely like going to kind of spell the end of him. Even if he is a wide player, we'd probably just look for like another average striker, or if we play Nani through the middle, I don't know, but we'll have our attack player set, and we'll have to offload some money probably, because you know, one of the only reasons that he would be willing to come here, because he's a player that's linked to like Lazio, he's been linked to like Sheffield United, Roma, just a bunch of like high profile top 5 league clubs. The only reason really that he would want to come here is because we can probably offer him bigger wages than any of those clubs can. So we would have to offload somebody, whether that's Coleman, whether that's Dwyer, which they probably won't return anyways. It'll have to be someone, so we can pay him the money that we need to get him to come here.
Unfortunately, I think it might be one of our more tradable assets. We might have to trade to get some allocation money to buy him down, in my opinion. I'm personally on both sides of the fence with this one. Daniel brought up a really good point a long time ago when we were initially talking about it, that you know, if it's all about the money, if it's not about the club, then I don't really want you here, you know. I don't want you here on 40%, all that stuff that y'all have already heard, most likely. So I agree with that, but also he is just such a win now. Put the finances to the side, get this player in the door, and I think he would be important for us moving forward. He's the type of signing that the successful teams make, like Seattle, LAFC, Atlanta United, unfortunately. That's the type of signing they would make. They would say, you know what, we want to win. We're going to deal with the finances later. And that's what they've been doing. So I do think that I like the signing. Now, offloading somebody, I think we might, like I said, we might have to trade one of our tradable assets. Of the team, when you think about it, who are our tradable assets?
Uri Rosell.
That's the first one that pops in my mind.
Sabas Mendes for me.
I think
I don't want him to go, but I think, you know, you saw the links that it was the Mexican clubs interested him in the winter. I mean, he's a player on the rise, but what I mean is that we kind of have a lot of competition for places in the middle now. I personally wouldn't want to lose him, but in terms of tradable assets to free space, who knows?
I would rather lose Urso than Mendes.
Whoa, don't be coming for Urso like that.
Mendes is better.
So
when you say tradable,
Chase. So with tradable, I meant in between MLS. So Mendes, tradable in terms of selling to an out of MLS club. Yes, I do agree with that, Taylor. Ooh. But when I was saying Taylor, I meant
Garberbucks.
Yes, Garberbucks. There we go.
Chris Mueller might be something.
Chris Mueller. That's what I was gonna say. He's a very tradable asset.
Yeah,
I think. I have several things that I want to touch on this. First of all, I don't think we necessarily need to cut anyone. I think we're, if we do have to offload someone, it should be Oder Ozel, because midfielders are always in demand, and you can find a midfield needy team where someone gets injured and like, hey, we have an MLS winning midfielder that trained with Barcelona, you know, why not? Here's Oder Ozel, offload his contract, get a few Garber bucks, you know, whatever, clear up that salary space. I don't actually think that we need to necessarily offload someone because we have an open DP spot and Dwyer's gone at the end of the year anyway. There's, I would say, a minuscule chance that Dwyer is in Orlando City uniform after this year. So there, it's not like we're accounting for him 3 years down the road, and Coman would be on a multi-year contract with us. Because we would be absolute idiots not to get him on a multi-year contract.
I think it was saying we would offer a 3.5 year.
Yeah, yeah. 3.5 years. That would be the basically the standard. So we're offloading Dwyer soon anyway. Josu Coman is actually not on a really expensive deal. He's a young DP, so his cap hit's actually pretty low. And he's on loan now, so we're actually not really paying very much for him at all. So I don't think his finances really figure into this at all.
Wasn't he a record-breaking signing, though, in the millions in terms of transfer fees? So that goes towards DP status, doesn't it?
No, actually, transfer fee has nothing to do with DP status. It's
Is it just wages?
It's just wages.
These rules are too confusing.
Yeah. Mendes, might have cost more than Coman, actually. That don't quote me on that, but I know Mendes was actually pretty expensive. He was like $2 million, I think, which is expensive for us.
Right.
But, I mean, Florian Coman would be our record signing several times over regardless. He's, the reason that I really want this deal to get done. Oh, second thing I want to say is this rumor should be taken with an entire salt shaker, not just a grain of salt, because the guy who sparked it, that Romanian club's owner, I think, either owner or president.
Bacali,
or something.
Yeah, Gigi Bacali.
That guy is apparently insane and likes to just talk to the press and get his club in the press. Any press is good press kind of thing. Now, we do have confirmation that we have made an offer, and apparently what he is, or made an offer in the past, and I don't think that it's been absolutely 100% confirmed that we've made an offer now. But what he is saying to the Romanian guy is saying to the press right now is that he has actually requested to sell Coman to Orlando City for a better deal than the offer we had made the past time, like before the season when the first round of rumors started. So
that's because of the market.
Yes, exactly. And so, if we were to pull the trigger on the deal now, it actually would be a pretty good deal for us, at least what we were willing to pay before the season. And really, not much has changed soccer-wise since then, just like overall situation-wise has changed. But, you know, player valuations, I mean, could remain pretty similar. So now, in terms of should we sign him, would he be a good fit? I think Florian Coman is the exact kind of player that we need to sign. Yeah. Our best right winger right now is Chris Mueller. Gavin, you recently put out a poll. Should Chris Mueller be a starter? I think like 95% of people said he should be a sub.
Now, it was only 36, 38 votes, something like that. But yeah, it was, overwhelming sub.
He is our best right winger, and it's not close. It is not close. Yeah, I think we absolutely need a winger. I think we need a winger three times more than we need a striker. Here's my reasoning. Oscar Pereja wants to play wide. We've seen it in the games we played so far this season. We've seen it in his FC Dallas days in the strategy. He likes to play wide. And if we're going to build our attack up the wings, we have Nani on the left. We have Moutinho on the left. They're plenty capable. We have Juan on the right. Do we really want our only option up to the right to be either don't know who's going to be there. Chris Mueller, Rubinho doing something. And Chris Mueller is good for 30 minutes a game. And Rubinho is good for something, I assume. Or Juan running straight up the wing. And not to disrespect Juan, but he's kind of a one-trick pony. He's a very, very good one-trick pony, but he's a one-trick pony. Do we really want to make our right side that one-dimensional if we're going to try to play up our wings? That way teams can basically say, okay, have a man on Juan at all times, have our winger, basically have our winger man mark him, have our left back stay back and don't let him go past you, and then we can overload our defense to the right side to deal with Nani and Moutinho on the left.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely want to see this Koeman deal done. I do agree that a winger is absolutely what we need. We saw, didn't we, in the winter with Alex Castro, the guy that seemingly played us. And then we got linked with the guy from Vallecano in La Liga, Alvaro Garcia, I think his name was. And now we're on Koeman again. So absolutely a winger is what the club are going after. And with Nani not being a spring chicken anymore, he's an older guy now. He's going to be playing through the middle a lot more. So we need a winger big time.
Absolutely. And I know we were linked to Germán Cano a lot, but I think we have a striker capable of getting fed on the roster. I think the best can, and I don't know exactly who it is. We have a lot of young guys with a lot of potential, and I would be willing to bet money that one of them, with the amount of service, if you have Nani, Moutinho, Juan, Pereira, and Coman on the field at the same time, and then Urso and Mendes in midfield too, I would be willing to bet money that one of Benji Michel, Dom Dwyer, Santi Patino, Daryl DK would be able to score 15-plus goals.
Hey, don't forget Akindele.
I said what I said. Give Tesho 6 to 8. You know, that's a good backup striker.
Yeah.
Tesho didn't do bad last year, but everyone knows he's that guy that's got like a low ceiling, right?
Yeah. I think it's telling that he wasn't amazing under Pereja. He did the job. Pereja's going to come in and use Tesho how I used him before, I think. And he mainly used him on the wings because he was happy with the striker he had.
Yeah. I think Tesho is best as a striker, not necessarily as a winger. I don't think he's very dynamic as a winger. And he's a decent-ish finisher as far as backup strikers go. So if you need to give your striker a rest, put him in.
In a two-striker system. If you recall the NYCFC opener, did he score in that game? I think it was a tap-in. But I just think in general, two-striker system was, you know, and obviously it didn't look like the two-striker system when you looked at the format that they showed online, but there was a lot of times last season, I thought, where we would kind of move kind of to a two-striker system, however, but just with how fluid we were in our front three. And Tesho really helped him thrive. And you saw goals like against Columbus where he hit it from outside the box and you know, some decent goals from him in that kind of system.
I think the best part of Tesho's game is that he's very intelligent in his positioning, which is why he thrives with more attackers, because he's able to not have the burden so much on him, and he can just stay in his position, get intelligent spots where he's going to be open, and if the ball falls to him, he can hit it.
Did he get? He got 10 goals in the last year. Did he get 10? I'm pretty sure it was.
I think he did get 10.
Yeah.
And he can hit in open shots, and he'll get in positions where if the ball falls to him, it will be an open shot. But he's not creating anything.
No, and that's what we've seen in the first two games so far this season. One guy that I want to see, I mean, we're quite stacked, aren't we, at striker, but a lot of young guys. I think when the season is in a position to resume, you'll see someone right at the back of that pecking order, like Patino, play with OCB. But one person I want to see play through the middle, because I just don't think it works out wide, is Benji Michel. All he can do is finish. He's a very good finisher, so I want to see him playing right at the top of the field. But obviously, Dwyer's got that spot with everyone fit.
Yep. Now, we should probably move on to our last couple of questions here. Here's a fun one real quick for you, Taylor. Are you ever going to move to Orlando, or are you kind of staying permanently in Canada?
Good question.
That comes from David Valentin.
Life choices, right? I mean, Orlando's the dream. We love going on there on vacation. Me personally, I will probably, I keep flip-flopping, me and my partner keep flip-flopping whether to stay in Canada or go home. We'll most likely probably go home. Don't quote me on that, I might change my mind again. But you guys know how much I love Orlando. You know, I love being down there. It is like a second home, but it's nice to visit on vacation. Let's just say that.
All right, now here's a good topic for the last one. Maureen, again, MTBH on Twitter, said, what was the biggest misconception you had about Americans in MLS? But I think all of us can kind of contribute and just kind of say, what was our biggest misconception about MLS before we started, you know, watching it? And we'll start with you, Taylor, on that one as well.
Misconceptions. I think kind of covered it earlier in the pod, like people seeing these videos like the fight and win guy at Seattle Sounders and like those Atlanta fans at Bobby Dodd with a Playmobil drum, like, it's the atmospheres, like they really are a lot better than the Euro snob would think, I think, for me, misconception wise.
Okay.
I think that, I'll go ahead. I think that, like, people obviously have questions about the quality of play of the MLS, and I think that a lot of them are kind of, like, valid, but I think that going forward, I think the MLS is surprisingly pretty high quality. Like, I think a lot of our teams are really top heavy, but if you look at the attacks of the elite teams, like, I realistically think that you could, you know, throw them at the top of almost any Premier League team and they wouldn't look out of place. Some might even be above average. Like, I think LAFC's attack in particular is one that could thrive in say, Italy or France or something like that. Like, our defense is quite awful in a lot of cases, but I think going forward, the MLS is quite an impressive and exciting league. Yeah.
All right, Daniel, your turn. What was your biggest misconception about Americans and MLS?
I think what kind of deterred me from MLS to begin with was just the American style format with the playoffs. I just didn't think it would work. I guess I come from the school that you play over a whole season, you get your rewards at the end of it, and every team should kind of, you know, pick up the pieces at the end of the season and do what they have to do to compete. So I didn't think that the cap system and the playoffs would work for me. But, you know, I've actually found that, at least over here, with the amount of talent available, you know, which is kind of even across most of the teams. I mean, you could add 3 or 4 players to any team that finishes in the, you know, out of the playoffs, and you can make them a playoff contention team. So I feel like the system works, at least in the United States, for what we have as far as resources go. I think that for these teams it works. If you opened it up and just said, okay, it's a free-for-all now, you have to buy your own players and you have to figure it out, then I think you would see a massive gap of parity start to appear, because there are teams with greater resources than others. So my misconception, I guess I should say, is that the American system would not work for soccer, but I believe in the MLS it does, so it's made it interesting, and it's made it, you know, available for me as a supporter to observe and to enjoy and, you know, have sort of vested interest in it.
All right, and Adam.
I think the biggest misconception, I don't know that I really had many. I came into it pretty open-minded, like, oh, there's a local team, it's fun, I'm going to support them. But the biggest one that I think gets tossed about that we haven't mentioned so far is retirement league, that, oh, it's only the only people that play in MLS are Americans and European players that are going to collect one last paycheck. And I think that's pretty wrong. Just flat out wrong. Of course, you have guys like Lampard and Pirlo, you know, coming over just to collect one last check that weren't very good. And
Gerard, too.
And alternatively, you have guys like Kaká and David Villa and Ibrahimovic that were very good in MLS, but by and large, the best players in MLS are guys like Carlos Vela, like sadly Miguel Almiron when he was here, Alfonso Davies, Diego Rossi, guys that Josef Martinez, and I hate that I'm naming LA and Atlanta players, but you know, it's true. They're these young guys from South America and from sometimes from Europe that have loads of potential and see MLS as a springboard to, hey, if I kill the league here, some European club's going to sign me for a ton of money. And yeah, I think that is much more the identity of MLS than retirement league.
All right, so I guess I can go on and say mine really quickly. I think I'm similar to Daniel in the fact that I grew up watching Arsenal. I guess I didn't grow up watching Arsenal. I started watching them 2010, 2011. So when RVP was just now starting to hit his prime. And when he had that 30-goal season, I list RVP as one of the reasons I fell in love with Arsenal. Obviously, he went to Manchester United, blah, blah, blah. But I was so used to watching, okay, everybody plays, they win the league at the end of the 38 games. Okay, then there's that separate tournament, the Champions League, that separate tournament, the FA Cup, the Carling Cup, you know, just that sort of style. When it came to MLS, I knew MLS existed. I think part of it was the lower tier of quality, definitely for me, just watching the players struggle with things that Premier League players don't struggle with on a regular basis. And I think, obviously, there's still a massive gap, but it's pushing up slowly, slowly, slowly. We're seeing more tactics in general, I would say, in MLS. We're seeing better players come to MLS, like the ones you cited, Adam, and just... For me, it was, I think, the lower tier of quality. That was the big thing. Once I finally got into it, like I was talking about earlier, I get obsessive about it. And I understand that it's still a lower quality, but it's still so fun to watch. It's still so fun to talk about that it doesn't even bother me anymore.
I think that when your snobs will say, well, the soccer's not great. Or I guess they'll call it football, but you know, football's not great. Why do you watch this low quality stuff? They can't even do this, and then they'll show like a howler from an MLS goalkeeper or something that of course happened in Premier League last week. But you know, I digress. But they'll be like, why do you watch this low quality stuff? Because it's fun.
It's entertaining. It's entertaining. That is the reason why I watch it. That is why the sport is there to entertain. Like, yeah. What you've said about the defenses, like, yeah, that's still true. The defenses in MLS, you know, very few spring to mind at being amazing. You know, Red Bulls of Aaron Long and stuff like that last couple of seasons, yes. But it's entertaining. You're going to see 30-yard strikes. You're going to see tap-ins. You're going to see Brian Rose, unfortunately. sorry I had to mention it. But it's entertaining, and it's different. What I don't get from the Euro snobs, and I'm going kind of rant mode now, but every league can't be of the quality of the top five leagues in Europe. You know, they just can't be. So MLS is finding its way. It is improving year upon year. You can see that with players like Alfonso Davies, Miggy Almiron going to Europe, and it's entertaining. Honestly,
I want to see them in like in the Twitter replies on like the Belgian league. I want like a Belgian team to post, not like Club Brugge, but like some like mid table Belgian team to post a highlight. I want all the Euro snobs go over there like, oh, look at the defending on that.
Or like the Swiss league or just some random league. I see what you're saying.
It's just MLS that they complain about because we're American, we're not European.
Yep.
And that's the kind of thing we're fighting against at Orlando City UK. And like I said, honestly, the reassuring and comforting, I suppose, thing for us is that not only with Orlando City, but we see on Twitter year on year more and more people getting into MLS. Our friends MLS UK show that you'll be familiar with on Twitter. Those guys do excellent work covering the whole league, and they've got about, I don't quote me, but I think they've got about 7,000 followers. You know, every year more and more Brits are getting into the league because we show it. You know, it's live on Sky Sports each week back home. So long may it continue.
Yep, but I think that's a good place to cut it off. Taylor, thank you so much for coming on. It was great, great chatting football with you.
Absolutely.
If you want to quickly, just one more time, where can any of my listeners who somehow do not follow you, where can they follow you at?
So we've got a website and a Twitter account. So our website is weareorlandocityuk.com. And our Twitter account is @Orlando_CityUK. So follow us for loads of great content. You won't see any toilet roll challenges because I'm awful. But you will see a lot of fun Orlando City stuff in self-quarantine. So head on over.
All right. Daniel, where can our followers or our listeners find you at?
Bucketman1982 over on Twitter. And EllenRoder82 over on Instagram, and you won't see any toilet roll challenges because I ain't got any toilet roll. So there you go.
Oh man.
I use baby
Chase,
wipes.
You're up. Oh, okay. That I was about to say. You using leaves in the garden? Oh. Chase, where can our followers find you at?
My Twitter is VamosOCSC, and my Instagram is ChaseWCrowley.
All right, and Adam.
You can find me at Kosher Taco Truck on Twitter. And yeah, that's where you can find me.
All right, hope you guys enjoyed that. That was a pretty good conversation about all sorts of topics. Thank you so much for all of the questions. We really appreciate it. And we will see you guys next week. Till next time. Won't you follow me?
Behind for Juan, here's the cross, he scores! Chicago takes it, and it's the first in the garden! Going quickly here, Nani gets in behind, here's Nani with a chip, it's 1-1!